Podcast One, How to Lie with Statistics by Daryl Huff, Octavius, and Juan. All right, the first section in Chapter One talked more about the tendency for people to overall either over or understate the truth, which in my mind is a form of lying. By then, statistics are accurate or legit. They then went on to talk about how some people who complete surveys compared to those who don't respond are different due to accessibility or pride. Chapter 1 also talked about those who respond in surveys compared to those who have too much pride to respond. For example, one wouldn't list their income in a survey due to having too much pride of it being low in their income tax return. Then that would mess up a survey. That statistic wouldn't necessarily be accurate. Mm-hmm. The Literary Digest section confused me a little bit. It pertained to the wording and the interviewer's effect based on the wording. Based on the way an interviewer would ask you a simple question, that would determine how you would answer. For example, they would say a lot more in a question necessary, and that kind of would affect the way you would answer. And the last section, recall, the bias recall section, was self-explanatory. It was literally a recall.
The first couple of chapters speak on surveys being filled out and what questions could be asked, and according to people, the data that might be collected. The whole brushing of the teeth survey, they say that most of the time people brush their teeth 1.02 times a day, in which most people will possibly lie and say they brush their teeth regularly every day, which causes the data to be wrong instead of it being right, because no one will admit that they do not brush their teeth. The book itself speaks about lies and statistics. It has a whole bunch of questionnaires, one that mainly speaks about Yale student men from Yale that get paid more than an amount of $25,111 will be alcoholics or something small of that sort instead of being so successful. Then the ones that do not reach that amount in a year usually throw the questionnaire away because they are not in the same boat as those who make more than that amount. Therefore, they cannot brag about it. Chapter 2 speaks a lot about the mean, median, and mode of house incomes that happen in the years worth of collecting compared by different family households. The percentage of wages is usually almost said to be 95% compared to the profit of the owner, which is in the 5th percentile. The example they used was that the average wage for a household would be $2,806.45 with a profit of $5,000. The tests that they ran tend to be small groups, because they believe that if you do use a large group that the data would tend to produce a small difference or an unworthy one. Tests have shown that when one tends to flip a coin, particularly a penny, heads will come up 80% of the time, which questions why we tend to call tails more than heads. In Chapter 3, there is a lot of speaking on graphs and the way data is recorded. One has to make sure that the data is easy for one to record because large amounts of data can affect the way the data is recorded. As an example, large margins can create errors in what was measured. According to the data, arithmetical average is 5,700. The median amount is 3,000 and the mode was 2,000, which means that most of the people that have that amount of income compared to everyone else. The most was 45,000, in which would be the maximum, and in the case, mode would also be the minimum. According to other data, between the years 1940 and 1948, the United States Steel Corporation average earnings went up 107%. The average amount of the family was $3,100 in 1949. Now it is $2,000, which made a drastic fall from the years that have passed.
Much Ado About Practically Nothing, Chapter 4. This little chapter basically talked about probable error and standard error. Probable error measures the errors of measurement based on how much off is your measurement device. For example, if you were using a measuring scale that is, let's say, 3 inches off a foot, then your measurements across trials is probably greater or less than this kind of defense. This kind of difference, becomes important when there are business decisions taken based on positive or negative results. Most people that practice statistics use standard error, which takes in about two-thirds of this case. You can only calculate the standard error by knowing the sample sizes. Sometimes, though, people make a big deal about a difference that demonstrates but tiny and unimportant. So, Juan, how do you feel about lying with statistics as of now from chapter 1 through 4?
I feel like lying with statistics gives you a clear understanding of why data is so important, because too much data can mess up one's information, and then if it's a little bit, then it would be just perfect. If it's a lot, it's a lot of errors. I think it also is cool that the author was able to relate real-life situations to statistics and showed how statistics can play an important role in everyday life when it came to income, toothbrushes, and even elections. How about you, Octavius? What do you think about the book, Lying with Statistics?
I kind of agree with it because I'm not always truthful during surgeries. Like, when I'm at the doctor's office and they ask me if I've had unprotected sex, I'm going to check no, because I don't really want my mom to know I'll be having unprotected sex. But when the doctor does ask me, I do say, yes, I have unprotected sex. It's not to say I lie on all surgeries, though, but I do understand it, and it does make sense. I feel like that's just the world that we live in. Like, no one is going to be 100% truthful, and sometimes, like, depending on what you're answering, it will benefit you if you do lie. So I can see why some people will lie, and I can see how statistics can be a lie of some sort. At first, when I heard about the book, How to Lie Statistics, when Mr. Mouse presented it to us, I was a bit confused. I thought I was going to be confused when reading the book, but now, like, scenarios and situations in the book kind of helps me understand, like, this is kind of an everyday thing. Like, it's not a surprise to me. It actually does make sense for someone to lie about their, let's say, for example, how many people stay in their house so they can get a certain amount of money for financial aid whenever they go to college. That wasn't in the book, but that's just a scenario that I came with on the spot. So it does make sense to me. People will lie for their benefit, and people and researchers take that information and they make data tables and graphs with information like that.
I didn't think it was possible for anyone to lie with stats, because stats is so, 100% most of the time, right? So for it to be lying with stats is kind of, like, new to me.